podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Ting.com. Ting is a mobile phone service that makes sense. Save money with Ting. Pay only for what you use. Ting doesn't require a contract and offers unlimited devices on one shared plan. To save $25 on your first Ting device, visit allaboutandroid.ting.com. That's allaboutandroid.ting.com. And by 99 Designs, the world's largest graphic design marketplace. 99 Designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of more than 225,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/AAA to receive a free power pack upgrade valued at $99. And by Hulu Plus. Hulu Plus lets you binge on thousands of hit shows anytime, anywhere on your TV, PC, smartphone, or tablet. Visit HuluPlus.com/AllAboutAndroid to start your free two-week trial. That's HuluPlus.com/AllAboutAndroid. Hello and welcome to another episode of All About Android, episode 139, recorded on Tuesday, December 10th, 2013. We are your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
I'm Ron Richards.
And I'm Gina Trapani.
Yes, thank you, Gina. It's so good to have you in studio today, Gina.
I got
you
a
sound
haircut.
Way different in
I got
person.
A haircut, you know, glasses. I didn't shave.
So it's okay. We forgive you, Gina.
Lowered my voice a little.
I'm sure people are screaming because they know. They recognize you from last week. You can't pull the wool over our eyes.
Oh,
you
darn.
You can't trick us this time.
Darn.
You're Aaron Newcomb. Always awesome having you on the show. Thank you for filling in for Gina once again.
Yeah, thanks for having me. No problem.
Absolutely.
Anytime.
And we are thrilled to welcome back J.R. Raphael, Computer World contributing editor and author of the Android Power blog. J.R., so good to have you back, sir.
Hey, it's good to be back. And just to clear up any potential confusion, I am also not Gina Trapani.
Okay. All right. I'm happy that you said that because I was...
I'm so glad we cleared that up.
Yeah.
I got to clear the air right off the bat. Don't want any misconceptions here.
It was distracting me at the top of the show. And I was like, do I? No. Just going
to... Yeah, me too. I was reminding myself, to be honest, more than anything.
Of course, we do miss Gina. She is traveling across country, moving to the East Coast right now. So, I don't know. It's kind of cold out there. And I'm sure there are lots of snowy places. So, I'm not very envious of that situation.
We completely missed an opportunity here to do a Google Maps kind of mashup of tracking Gina, you know.
You're so right. Dang, we could have latituded her.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. We could have done like a Gina Ingress kind
of
thing.
Where's Gina now?
Gingress.
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 The world is Gina Trapani?
I have no idea. Maybe she doesn't want us to know, actually.
I was going to say, yeah.
You know what? December belongs to me. You guys just do your thing. I'm going to drive across the country in the snow. JR, you're always pumping out awesome content at Computer World. This article right now, Android 4.4 upgrade list. Is your device getting KitKat? Kind of a good guide for people who are, you know, keep hearing us chatting about the awesomeness of KitKat and wondering if they're going to get it or not. What did you find? Are there a lot of devices, a lot of kind of the expected devices that are going to get this sometime soon?
Well, you know, it's interesting because it's gotten a little better, but it depends on which manufacturer you're talking about. Some of the big ones like Samsung are still staying pretty tight-lipped about it.
Yeah.
You know, if you scroll down to the bottom of it, I kind of disclose who I've reached out to and haven't gotten a direct answer from. Samsung's one of them. But there is a lot of good news. You know, Motorola, of course, is just dominating KitKat so far. They've got it out to, you know, the Moto X, Moto G's coming up, the Droid phones are coming up, and a lot of other random phones that you might not expect. Like, let's see, I'm looking at it here while we're talking, the Atrix HD, they're going to give it to. And there's some others, HTC, at least they're making it sound like they're going to be on top of it. The regular one is supposed to be getting it shortly. And we'll hope that everybody else follows suit. I mean, one or two manufacturers stepping up and making things happen quickly, hopefully will be ammunition. Get everybody else up in gear and say, hey, raising the game, we've got to do it too. That's our hope.
Yeah. This is something that Google said that they were going to try to do with 4.4 is try to make it more friendly for lower end devices so that, right. And I think it's great for developers, especially, right? Because then you can develop on 4.4 and you know your app's going to run in more places. I'm not sure that it'll, and I'm curious about your opinions on this as well, Roundtable. I'm not sure it'll really benefit the consumer too much if they're running like a device, like a Samsung device that's running TouchWiz. I mean, a lot of the features that we talk about in 4.4 that are on stock, like the new search and being able to have, you know, Google always listening and all that kind of stuff, probably aren't going to appear on those older devices because they're going to be running TouchWiz or whatever else overlay that the manufacturer puts on them, right?
Yeah, I mean, even with – I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. For it.
I was just going to say, even within the Nexus world, I mean, you look at it like a Nexus 4, for example – a lot of people got kickhead on that and said, wait, mm-hmm. this is it? The notifications, notification icons are white, but what else is going on? Of course, right. There's a lot of stuff behind the scenes that you don't necessarily see right away. But yeah, especially with Google keeping the Google Experience Launcher exclusive to the Nexus 5 for the moment, for whatever reason, a lot of the obvious front-facing stuff that a typical end user is going to notice, you just don't see. So yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I'd agree.
It's kind of a peculiar version of Android from that regard, right?
Like, yeah.
There are a lot of cool features about KitKat, but it's interesting that Google has decided out of the gate, at least in the near term, to kind of segregate a particular version of KitKat to the Nexus 5, and right. Then everybody else gets this other thing, and it's kind of a little nebulous to really kind of pick it apart and be like, okay, well then what do we stand to gain?
I mean, there are some, correct me if I'm wrong, JR too, but I mean, there are some upgrades, especially as far as, application optimization and things like that. Mm-hmm. So some speed optimization things.
That's kind of the big deal.
You know, that's really the big deal. And, maybe some security fixes and things like that. Again, the consumer probably won't see that as much. But for the developer, again, huge benefit there to having 4.4 run on as many devices as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. And not to downplay, there's a lot of cool stuff. You know, you've got like the system-wide wireless printing, the new dialer app with integrated search, the cloud storage integration, immersive mode, the new email app. But again, like you were saying, when it comes to a Samsung device, a TouchWiz device, who knows how much of that's actually going to make it through.
Yeah. All right, Brian, you got your fingers ready? It's time for breaking news.
Break me off a piece of that KitKat.
Yeah. This just in, well, shortly before the show went to air, so I thought it was close enough to be breaking news. Nokia Normandy is actually rumored to be a low-end Android-based phone. This phone was leaked. Of course, EvLeaks is a very popular leaker of such things and has a really good track record. You'll notice that the device doesn't really have a whole lot to kind of give you any sort of clues on the front of it. What operating system it's running, doesn't have any controls or anything like that. But The Verge's Tom Warren says that there might actually be some pretty significant some significance to this. Checked with multiple sources who claim that this phone is an Android-based device due for a 2014 release. Nokia Android. That's going to make some people happy, although it's a low-end phone, supposedly, but it's kind of a big deal, no?
I think it is. It's a little strange, right, with strange. The whole Microsoft thing.
Yeah.
I didn't think I would ever see another Nokia device with Android on it, but here we go with the rumor. I mean,
his rumors, of course.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. I mean, it's great, especially there's a lot of good low-end devices coming out. And so, again, no specs on this, really, that we've seen so far. But, you know, I think that more low-end devices in the marketplace is really good. The low-end devices also usually, I think we're going to talk about this a little later, usually they're higher margin devices, the low-end. So I think it's good from a manufacturer standpoint to bring more low-end devices just to get that higher margin sell out in the marketplace.
Sure.
And it's got to beg the question, how long is Microsoft going to stick with Windows Phone? You know, because clearly whether or not it's a success or not, I mean, we look at the market numbers. I'm not seeing it in the wild. You know, the only time I see the Microsoft Windows Phone is on the Nokia Lumia ads before movies.
Right.
And that's it. You know, like I'm not seeing people using it. I'm not seeing people going, oh, I love my Windows phone. So could this be a way to dip their toe in the water and say, okay, let's see how Android does. And then if they do a easy, low cost, easy entry into the marketplace, then do we see the higher end phone be brought to Android? And then, you know, the next thing you know, Microsoft is competing in the Android space. I'd be surprised.
Man, I just could not see a world where Microsoft just completely ditches its mobile OS platform and says, you know what, let's just do Android. It's there and everybody's on it. And
crazier things.
I suppose so, but
it could be a phone that, you know, they had developed a while ago and they planned to release, you know, and then the acquisition happened and they just said, well, we got to push this out, let's get it out the door. And
I feel like we've kind of heard things along that regard, along those lines about when rumors of a Nokia Android device have kind of popped up, especially after kind of the acquisition.
Because a lot of dollars go into, you know, the investment into these phones, a lot of it goes in up front. So You've paid engineers to work on this thing. You've evaluated different suppliers. You've got the chipsets all down. I mean, there's a lot of work that goes on up front. They're probably like at the 10-yard line essentially here. And that, well, we just got to throw this thing over the finish line and get it out there. Mm-hmm. That's enough sports metaphors for one day.
All right, let's enter into the end zone. And oh wow, that was really bad. Let's get to the news. Wow. Enter into the how ridiculous is that? And he entered into the end zone. All right, I'm going to shut up now. Okay, so Android things that have nothing to do with sports. 4.4.1, wait a minute, no, now 4.4.2 has been released. These two versions of Android have kind of hit back-to-back. Apparently the former one, which basically had the primary purpose of addressing the downsides of the Nexus 5 camera, which we've talked about on the show, with things like speed improvements. Thank you very much for the touchdown transition. Keep the sports metaphors and transitions coming. Autofocus tweaks, because autofocus is just really slow on the Nexus 5. I guess that first version contained a number of glitches. So 4.4.1 was halted, and now a 4.4.2 update is apparently hitting devices. So I haven't gotten it yet on my Nexus 5.
I got 4.4.2 on my Nexus 7 last night.
Oh, okay.
But I've yet to get it on my Nexus 5.
Go ahead.
So and don't ask me how or why, but yeah. So there, I just checked on my Nexus 5, still no update.
Yeah, chat room saying 4.4.1 for Nexus 5 and then 4.4.2 for everyone else. So
I got you.
One thing, because I know there's a lot of mystery of what the hell is actually in 4.4.2. Google told me that it does include a patch for that SMS denial of service vulnerability that you heard people talking about that was in Google Nexus devices. That was the only specific thing that they said, you know, among other things. But that may have been enough to, you know, make them want to push it forward with a handful of other fixes.
I mean, with
the 4.4.1 thing, it's great that they're fixing it so quickly with the camera, but then it also makes you wonder, why didn't it just ship with a semi-decent camera software set up right out of the box? It's a little weird, this whole approach of, and we see it with a lot of phones, especially with cameras these days, of, yeah, it's not great, we're going to fix it with a software update really soon. You know, just get it right. Well, something so big like that's so obvious.
You got big launches and you got release dates and logistics and shipping and all stuff like that. I mean, at some point they put out the best thing they can do, and I expect there to be updates. I expect there to be fixes. You know, the camera one was a pretty big one, but I mean, I've been using the camera a lot. Other than the focus thing, like, I don't think it was unshippable. You know, it was still I felt it was better than my Nexus 4. Like, I don't feel like I took a step backwards in it. You know,
it's very interesting though with the Nexus 5 and the camera. It's so incredibly subjective with this in particular, because if you go on the internet, you're going to read people posting that it's the worst camera ever, and bleh, you know, they just tear it apart. And I don't feel that way.
And also the battery life is the worst battery life they've ever seen. And I mean, everybody has a different experience and a different opinion from it. You know,
and wildly different.
Yeah. Wild.
Like,
yeah,
okay,
wild.
So is there a difference with the hardware going to these different people? Because I've had great battery, and my camera my camera results have been great. The performance, it's been all right. It's been serviceable for sure.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I agree with you guys. I think it was blown a little bit out of proportion. And a lot of it may have been, you know, there was that initial Verge review that went out before anyone else had a review. And, you know, you read something like that, and whether you want it to or not, it kind of influences your perception. You go in with this preconceived notion of, oh, this phone has a crappy camera, and whatever. But yeah, no, I had the same experience as you guys. I mean, the camera wasn't out of the box great, but I thought it was passable, as good as most phones in that league, you know, and it certainly wasn't awful, and it was kind of made out to be the worst ever invented. And yeah, I didn't quite think that was the case either. But again, it's good that they're improving it, even if it would have been nice to have it that way. Mm-hmm. Right there. Ron had a good point, though, especially with this one. It seemed like they really wanted to hit that Halloween date with the whole Kit Kat tie-in and all that. Maybe yep. That forced a little bit of rushing, you know, filling the gaps after the fact kind of thing.
And if they had not hit that, then after the fact, everyone would have been like, oh, they were so close to Halloween. What? You know, it's Kit Kat. Why right, didn't right. they release
you just them? Can't, you can't win.
No, I mean, you can't.
And JR, I'm laughing. You said how, you know, like it got a little blown out of proportion. I mean, something got blown out of proportion on the internet. Shocking. You know, like
when does that happen, right?
Yeah, exactly. There's always going to be detractors and there's always going to be issues that come up. They just got to do the best they can. And the majority of people will, you know, will hopefully be fine with it and roll out, which I think we're seeing happen. One interesting thing on 4.4.2 on the Nexus 7, I don't know if I just didn't notice it on 4.4, but I think they changed the widgets. The power module widget looks different. Like they're
camera. I'm curious.
Yeah, I noticed some subtle UI changes and stuff like that that I don't think were. It's that thing when you do the upgrade and you're like, did they change that already? Right, or like, am I just noticing it? You know,
does the widget itself actually look different? If you hold up to the camera, is it noticeable?
Yeah, the widget itself, they changed the location meter thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, yes.
Yeah. Oh, there it is. Yeah.
Which they did change in the system, so that actually makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And then also, like, when things aren't turned on, like the sync icon and the Bluetooth icon are like outlines as opposed to being just grayed out. So, interesting.
But it looks like the hollow blue is still there, right? It didn't go to the gray-white theme?
Yeah,
I couldn't quite see it. But...
Yeah.
B Woogie in the chat also says the notifications drawer isn't there on the lock screen, which
makes sense.
Yeah, I'm not sure I like that. Like, I like when I turn my phone onto the lock screen, I kind of like to see the notifications so I can go, oh, okay.
But I don't know. That's interesting. Yeah.
Well, speaking of not seeing things,
good.
If you don't want the NSA to see things, you might want to check out this next story. Are you guys kind of freaked out over the NSA maybe taking a look at your SMS and text? No?
I got nothing to hide.
Nothing to hide. Anybody else?
I understand. I understand the desire to, you know, to bolt it up. Sure. I'm not.
Honestly, if they want to read my text messages talking to my friends about comic books, they are more than welcome to.
That's what I figured, too. I don't say anything interesting on my text. It's like, when will you be home? 6 o'clock. Yeah. You know, it's like
I'm at the bar. I'm 5 minutes away. OK, where are you? Like a lot of that. So if they want to read that, that's fine. Yeah.
Some people are a little bit concerned about it. And it looks like text messages will soon be encrypted by default if you're running CyanogenMod. There's a story out today by actually in Forbes by Andy Greenberg, who talks about the developer Moxie Marlinspike. I really hope that's this person's real name, who launched TextSecure a while ago, which actually does exactly what we're talking about. TextSecure, you can use that and it will encrypt your messages so that when you send it, you know, nobody should be able to theoretically hack into those and see what's going on, even if they're snooping on you. Like the NSA has done in the past. But this is actually the news here is that they're going to actually be incorporating that into CyanogenMod in an upcoming release. So now 10 million more users will have their text messages by default encrypted so they don't have to worry about someone snooping on their text messages anymore. So there you go. If you're a CyanogenMod user, you can look forward to that coming up. I don't know if this actually says what version of CyanogenMod it's going to be coming to, but it will be coming to CyanogenMod soon. So look forward to that.
Yeah, and I mean, the cool thing about that, you know, 10 million users is just the amount of users that actually opted into the tallied statistics. Right. CyanogenMod actually has, you know, we can assume not more everybody that's a user of CyanogenMod, you know, replied to those statistics. Probably a lot of them didn't. So that's a lot of people that just automatically have that encryption built into their devices. So end-to-end, it works. And that's kind of the trick with encryption, right? It's like, if you're both not playing the game, then it's hard. Like, if it was just a matter of, I'm going to install TextSecure, which it is an app that you can install on your device, and use it, you also have to make sure that the person on the other end uses it as well for it to be an effective
encryption. You have to have a shared key.
Process.
Right, you have to have that shared encryption key to make it work. So, you know, it says here, that they're also looking at things like Firefox OS and Ubuntu Phone,
right.
You know, to try to, I mean, it'd be tough for them to actually, I think, you know, Google would have to buy them essentially to get it into Google proper. But if you're using an alternative OS like CyanogenMod or perhaps Firefox OS in the future, Ubuntu Phone or others, you know, there's a good chance that you'll be able to have this available for you as well.
Cool.
And probably shouldn't. I mean, we're joking about the snooping and the text and stuff like that. But ultimately, I mean, I think privacy is important, and like having that option is a really nice option. And I don't mean to dismiss, you know, that whole topic. I'm just not very interesting. So
yeah.
Right.
No,
I get the complaints about it. And I understand it.
It's one of those things you agree with philosophically, even if personally you really don't care if they see what you're texting. Because
and that's the thing. And also,
but philosophically, it makes sense.
Yeah, and I always take kind of like a realist approach to it where, like, you know, there's so much data coming in. You know that they've got filters and keywords and they're looking for key things, and they're not actually reading the nitpick, me and my friend arguing over what movie to see that night. You know what I mean? Like, they're looking for specific things. And if that helps our safety, then, you know, it's a tough issue because, you know, you want to be able to use technology to help protect everyone, but you don't want to invade on privacy. So I understand where people who are critical of it come from.
Yeah. But I have heard that they are big Hobbit fans. So just, you know, be careful when you start talking about the movie. If you don't like it, I wouldn't send that to someone in text.
One of the things actually that this does bring up, and I don't want to go on too much of a tangent, but being a storage guy in my day job, it is important to remember that encrypted messages. So text is highly compressible, right? So you can compress that text down and send it, you know, you can compress it down to 99% usually and send that over the wire. Once you encrypt it, though, you can't compress it down because all the bits and bytes are scrambled. You don't know which one is, you know, a repeat of the next one and so forth. You really can't compress that down. So if this were to take off in a big way, it may actually be a little bit of a boost. I know text messages aren't big in general, but maybe a little bit of a boost to the traffic that goes across the text messaging system for encrypted messages. So
interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now that JR is here, we have got a great time to do a little grave dancing. As JR wrote a great post.
Always a fun pastime.
Yeah. Looking back on 2013 to see all the applications that Google killed this year.
Oh, almost need taps.
This is sad.
Like. So very well done, JR. So of these apps, you know, we got Google Reader, Google Shopper, Google Currents, Google Play Magazines, Google Talk, messaging app, Cloud Print. JR, which one are you most upset about losing?
Oh, man, I think it's got to be Google Catalogs of all the times I use that thing. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, none of them are ones that I spent a whole lot of time. I lamented Reader for quite a long time, but I've grown to love Feedly. I mean, specifically, I actually use an app called it used to be called Reader HD. I think they now call it Reader Plus on my phone. But yeah, Feedly's filled the void. Reader was the one I was initially upset about. Yeah, most of these, and just to be clear, it was meant to be a little tongue-in-cheek, doing a little kind of heartfelt obit for each one. And this is also focusing just on Android apps, not looking at iGoogle and that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, a lot of them either just became unnecessary or got folded into something else, you know, like with Google Play Magazines. You know, we've got Newsstand, so, you know, still seemed like it was a good time to say goodbye and give it a little heartfelt send-off.
We hardly knew ye. No, yeah. Really, we hardly knew ye.
Exactly.
I really love the Reader hubbub and everybody freaking out over that when they announced it. And then the date came and went and everybody just kind of migrated to Feedly and it just was very quiet. Like, I thought it was going to be much worse this summer when the Google Reader apocalypse happened, but it seemed to have been handled pretty well, so...
Important to point out that Cloud Print isn't necessarily dead.
It's just integrated.
It's just, yeah, integrated. But my question about that is, I guess it's possible that they update it the way they update other, you know, of their closed source proprietary apps that they update through the Play Store now, right? Like they move system thing. But I guess they're going in the reverse direction in this regard, right?
Yeah.
Like it started as Cloud Print, the app, and now it's integrated into the OS. So, of course... it becomes, not necessary. What about voice?
Yeah. What about voice?
That's the next one. I guess if someone pointed out in the comments to me that technically I should have included that because, as with Cloud Print, I included things that aren't necessarily dead but have been given a death sentence. And somebody mentioned that the executioner hasn't arrived, but voice does have its sentence, which is fair. That makes sense.
Not seeing a whole lot of action on voice these days.
Yeah, I mean, they pretty much flat out said it's going to be integrated into Hangouts. It's just a question of not if, but when. So it seems like surely sometime next year we'll see that happen. It's also weird on that same note how, you know, the internet calling came to the iOS version of Hangouts, but not to the Android one. Mm-hmm. I don't know if maybe the voice integration plays some role there. I'm just thinking out loud. I don't know. But
can you imagine how tangled that knot is?
Oh, yeah.
Like I can just picture a bunch of developers in Mountain View just sitting down looking at voice and looking at Hangouts and going, Oh, God. Like, they have a lot of work to do. You know?
No, they've got all these piles, right? And that pile for voice keeps coming, getting put in front of them. They're like, here, we'll just do this thing first. Exactly. I don't even want to go near that pile until I know I've got all this other work done.
Well, I'm sure they have separate developer teams, too. So the developer teams are like, really? We got to work with the Hangouts guys now? And the voice, you know, it's like we don't want to work with them. Like, we've been doing our own thing. We've got our own code base, you know. And I don't know. I think I can see that. I can see that conflict happening right between the development teams. Like, we want to put this feature in our app. Well, we want to put this feature in our app. You know, it's like, ooh, you got your chocolate in my peanut butter.
And folks in the chat room are picking up on the key thing about voice, which is going to be those phone numbers. That if they do any alteration or anything to the phone numbers, because there are people who are using that as their phone number now.
Right. Oh, yeah, and that's my phone number. Yeah.
It's my phone number, too.
Yeah.
So I have a little something to weigh in. I ran a story a little while back, and I hate to do this whole sources close to the information, but it was a thing where people who definitely know but couldn't go on the record as saying for reasons, you know, related to business and their jobs and all that. But I have it on pretty good authority at Jobs. I have it on pretty good authority that the key features of voice, call forwarding, voicemail, SMS management, that stuff won't be going away. I don't know specifically how that will be integrated into Hangouts, but when that integration happens, those features, I've been told, will remain intact in some form or another. So that's a relief. Now, at the same time, they did already say they're killing off a lot of these third-party apps like Groove IP. Those kind of things that tap into it aren't going to work. For me, what I'm annoyed about is I use a little box called the OBI that lets you basically tap into Google Voice calling to use a landline-style phone for free calling. I mean, I've just got like a regular phone that I use as my office phone, one as the home phone, and I get calls on it and make calls from it from my Google Voice number, and that's also going to get axed, I think, like next May or something when they finish that transition. So that kind of sucks. But the service itself allegedly will remain, which is good news, at least.
This is that danger as we get more and more, like, you get integrated using these services, and then they're going to change something. It's going to change the way you have to do business or somehow. And it's I think it's really the long-term ramifications is that can you depend on these services, you know?
Well, especially when they're basically free services. I mean, they do charge for, like, some international calls, I think, but, you know, they're basically free services, so it's not like they have paying customers that are going to, you know, throw up their hands and say, no, we're not going to pay you anymore if you change this. It's like, well, it's free. We'll just do whatever we want and, you know, hopefully make the right decisions.
Yep.
The free customers will complain loudly, though. You can't forget that.
They'll complain, but you know, it's one thing just to complain. It's another thing to withhold your dollars from the vendor, right? I mean, that's what always gets people's attention is you start taking away money. If they start losing money based on these decisions, then, you know, higher ups go, whoa, wait a second. But in this case, it doesn't apply. Well,
the user can't. I mean, that's the thing is that hopefully they're going to make the right decision. They're going to make the right decision for Google, for what they want to do, and if I'm upset by it, I mean, I can go to iOS, but I'm still going to use Google as a search engine. Like, you have no direct way to be like, well, I'm just not going to buy their product, you know? Like, it's hard to get away from it. Like now, if they just revamped Google Docs and all that sort of stuff, I don't know what I would do. Like, my entire business runs on Google Docs. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's the power that they're yielding is very interesting. And we're completely off topic, but still.
So. That's okay, because it's very interesting.
It is interesting.
Yes.
Let's get back on topic with a little Glass update.
Yay!
We actually missed this story a while back. A California Glass explorer, Cecilia Abadie, was... I'm probably mispronouncing your name. Sorry, Cecilia. Was pulled over on suspicion of speeding while wearing glass. And the police officer actually issued her a separate citation for driving with a video/television in the car in view, which is illegal in the state of California. The trick there being, okay, well, how did the police, you know, those who use glass understand that the display is not always on. It's there, but it's not always on. It has to be actively turned on, unless you're doing something like video recording where it's streaming always on, or there's an app that you're, you know, there's glassware that you're running that keeps it on. It's not like that. Cecilia has pled not guilty, claiming that the screen wasn't in fact on while she was driving. The officer claims he saw the screen when he went to her window. If you're, you know, standing there talking to someone that's wearing glass and the screen is on, you can see a little kind of like flickering screen shining back at you. Cecilia reminded of the fact that glass has a setting for activating the screen when tilting up at a certain angle. So this is going to be heard in court in January. It could have reasonably wide implications to the world of wearables, particularly wearables on your face. What do you guys think here?
This is a precedent. This is a precedent. Like this is going to set precedent. I need to look into it, but I wonder if like the EFF and whomever are going to get involved and help her out and that sort of thing. But I mean, whatever that case does, whatever that ruling is, that's going to set the tone, I think.
And didn't she say that? I'm sorry, I was looking at stories when you were reading this. You may have already said this, but didn't she say that the display actually came on when she looked up at the officer?
Right, when she looked up, it actually
displayed. She looked up at the officer, and
that's
it went
kind
on.
Of some of the new details.
But when she was driving, it wasn't. So I don't know.
Tricky. I guess we'll see what happens.
It seems like there's a lot of misunderstanding about glass and what it does and doesn't do. Is having that on your face more dangerous than having a GPS navigation on your dashboard that you're glancing down and looking at? It just seems like we've got to hash this out. I guess maybe there'll have to be a court case or two that kind of sets a precedent before.
Then it's like, okay, well, then what is a screen? GPS is a screen, but then I've heard of people getting in trouble because they have GPS on their phone, that they're using. And so what are the differences there?
Essentially a heads-up display, though, in this case, right? I mean, couldn't they make that argument? Well, I'm not a lawyer. But, I mean, couldn't you make the argument that, hey, this is essentially a heads-up device, similar to some cars that – I don't know if they still do, but there were some high-end cars that had heads-up devices. So you could see all the stuff that you would see looking down at your dashboard, but up on your windshield. I mean, it's essentially the same thing. It's not blocking your view for sure, so
– Yeah,
it's arguably less invasive than some of the dash displays, the really intricate dash displays that have so many little icons and things going on them. I mean, that takes your attention more and you're looking down to see it. So,
Yeah, absolutely. And then just real quick before we do the ad, there was this really cool. I thought it was pretty cool. Stop motion video that was shot entirely with glass. And I enjoy watching these kinds of things, but just kind of cool to see it from the perspective if it ever loads. It's just kind of a couple of minutes stop motion animation of this guy in a coffee shop who takes down the number of a girl, and then it gets smudged, and he basically follows the smudge all around his hand and everything. Cool creative things you can do with Google Glass. I like seeing this kind of stuff. I have to wonder how long it took to do this. Also have to wonder how his arms must have gotten really tired, because there's a whole long, long, long stretch where he's holding his arms in front of the camera. And I mean, you kind of can't move it, right? Artist has to come in, draw it, and you got to keep your arm in the same spot so you don't lose
is
your
points. Someone else taking the picture? Because both his hands are in some of those shots too. Is he doing the blink, using the blink mod probably? Or
you know what? I would imagine it's probably somebody else taking the picture so that he can focus on acting, but he's wearing the glass through the whole thing, so.
It's dedication right there.
Yeah. Cool stuff. Anyways, take a look. Show notes, twit.tv/AAA. We'll have a link to that. All right, let's take a break. Thank our first sponsor of today's episode, Ting. Ting is fantastic. They're a no BS mobile phone service. We talked about them a lot on the show. They've been with us for quite a while now. Ting is an MVNO reseller of the nationwide Sprint network. They're very different from what you might be used to with your network. They don't have contracts or early termination fees. They're truly and completely contract-free. No early termination fees or BS. That kind of stuff is out the window. They actually have a new ETF relief program. If you're paying an ETF to come to Ting, they've got your back. They're going to give you a credit of 25% of your ETF up to $75 per device. You simply purchase your device through Ting, port your number over, then you submit your final bill with your ETF detailed from your previous carrier, and you go to ting.com/ETF if you want to read about more along those lines. But they'll give you a little bit of that back. That's really cool. No bundling or ride-along services, no overage charges or penalties. The other guys, they charge you for all sorts of things. If you go over your minutes, text, data, Ting just basically, you pay for what you use. It's that simple. No add-on charges for things like voicemail, tethering, hotspot, three-way calling. It's all part of the service. No mysterious line items on your bill. It's actually very easy to read your bill and to understand exactly what you're getting charged for. Ting spells it all out in real language for you, so it's not difficult to decipher. And you can have unlimited devices on one plan. Have as many devices as you want, sharing minutes, megabytes, messages, all that. Each device on a plan actually costs a flat $6 per month. So if you are interested in Ting, here's what you can do to kind of get started. First, you purchase your mobile phone device from Ting which you'll actually receive in 2 to 5 business days. You're paying the contract free price, essentially. So you're going to pay more for your phone up front. So when you take a look at the devices and you see the cost, that's because you're buying it off contract. But that enables you to get into their service pricing, which is extremely affordable and very different from the other guys. You could also bring over your favorite Sprint phone to Ting, like the iPhone 4, 4S. You can basically, they have a full list of eligible phones, and you can go to go and click on the link BYOD up at the top of the page, and Ting will even will actually allow you to bring your phone over that way. They'll even help you turn old devices into cash to help the move to Ting. After you activate your device with Ting, and you'll have the option to select a new phone number. You can also port an existing one if you like. Ting will break your rates out by minutes, text messages, and megabytes, and bill you at the end of the month for what you've used. So here's what you can do. Visit Ting today. It's allaboutandroid.ting.com. Use that URL. That tells them that you came from this show, All About Android. It's allaboutandroid.ting.com. You can save money and better manage your mobile phone usage with Ting. You can also check out their savings calculator and see how much you or your company can save. All About Android viewers also save $25 on your first Ting device when you sign up. Nice little bonus. So visit allaboutandroid.ting.com. Start saving today, and we thank Ting for their continued support of All About Android. Thank you. Speaking of hardware, let's go.
Football.
Yes. Was that football? Home run! Ron, you're up.
Exciting with the football. talk about exciting. An anonymous Google employee told The Information, an interesting blog, that the Nexus TV device capable of streaming video from The Usual Suspects will and also play video games is in the works. So this is the rumored next generation football TV viewing device, presumably to replace the Google TV that I know and love so much. We first heard about this existing kind of secretly in CES 2013 backroom meetings. They heard that there might be some Kinect-like motion detection, but this report doesn't mention any of that. It does mention that there could be a touchpad remote that would be included with the box. And no support for live broadcasts, and to expect an aggressive price. And my question is, aggressive in aggressively cheap or aggressively expensive? I assume aggressively cheap.
Yeah, I would assume that too.
But I would imagine as CES is coming up, in less than a month now, we're going to see a lot of traction on the Google TV kind of experience. I hope so too.
I mean, it's kind of interesting. I use Google TV every day. My kids use it. My wife knows how to use it now. It's how we watch TV for the most part, except for, occasional things like football games where we get that over broadcast antenna. But everything else pretty much is over the Google TV box that I have. So having this all built into a single unit, I think, is really a good idea. I hope it's not based on Google TV, though. I mean, I hope it's based on whatever the current, KitKat or whatever the current version of Android is. So.
Well, I mean, I would like to see how they want to evolve, because Google TV I don't think was flawed. Like, I liked it. I use it, like you said, I use it every day. I don't even watch anything on broadcast. I'm watching everything IP based, and I would like to see what this next generation is going to be. I don't think Chromecast is it. I like having a device that's got a little power to it.
And if you're doing a TV, you could build Chromecast right into the TV, right?
So then you got multiple options. Actually, that would be moving Ron's TVs.
Get out of here,
Ron. Foot
is
stuck. Listen, I'm not moving you away from me, I promise. I think it would be a failure if it launched without Chromecast capability.
Yeah definitely. Yeah.
They really have to capitalize on that. That's building, in some ways, Chromecast is building more of a name for Google's kind of living room ambitions than Google TV has been, just because it's so inexpensive, and it has a lot of good kind of buzz and goodwill behind it.
Yeah.
What do you think about all this, JR?
Well, it's interesting. I never got into Google TV. I played around with it a little, but I've definitely fallen in love with Chromecast. And for my kind of usage, I'm curious to see what this would have that would entice me to get it over Chromecast. Because for me and what I do, I'm not a big gamer. For the kind of usage I have and we have in my house, Chromecast does everything. And I know we're going to talk about this a little later, but with the new apps that came out for it today, you've got local playback even. So I don't know. I'm I'm interested to see what they're going to do, but I'm going in personally with a little bit of skepticism as to whether there would be anything there that would convince me that it would be something I would want to own over a Chromecast. I mean, what could this offer that would make you guys want to use it over a simple solution like Chromecast? I'm curious to know.
That's what I'm kind of having a hard time coming up with, because Chromecast has been great. But, you know, realizing that Google TV is more like, you know, is Android OS running on your TV, so it enables, you know, kind of your standard games and everything. Although I hear games is in the works for Chromecast too, but I can't imagine it's the same kind of.
But the problem with Chromecast is that it's basically a streaming endpoint. So you've either got a phone or a tablet or a computer, and you could say, okay, take this content on this device and just serve it up to the my TV monitor. That's all it can do. Now, when you talk about multitasking, you talk about data searching, like I'll be watching something and I'll just pop over to Chrome and do a search and look something up. I think I use the Primetime app on Google TV all the time to go rent movies and search for things and things like that. So that when you get into actual interaction and actual kind of any sort of multitasking and any sort of data retrieval or data or, you know, like application use, then Chromecast falls short.
Yeah, I agree.
So you'd rather use those apps via the TV than use them via your phone or tablet or whatever you have in front of you? Or do you find you get more out of it that way?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, like the idea being that if you are accessing that data, you're using the TV as a information device, not just as a monitor that's being streamed to.
Yeah, and it already works that way. I mean, if you have a Google TV device and you go to YouTube, for example, and you hit the cast button, you'll notice that, like, I have a Chromecast and a Google TV. So I have two options there, actually three options, because it'll also stream to my smart TV. So it'll stream to my smart TV, it'll stream to Google TV, or it'll stream to the Chromecast already. It already does. A lot of the apps already do that. Yeah. So I think they've got this built in. I think that there is an upside here for developers, for TV manufacturers, in that if they were to use this platform, that takes some of the development out of their hands. They could use Android as the smart TV platform riding underneath the actual, you know, optics and everything in the TV. That would take some of the development out of costs out of their pocket as well, if Google could, you know, market this towards those folks and say, hey, look, run Android as the basis for all this stuff. We'll do all the stuff you do today with your smart TV, and we'll do it better because these things will be constantly updated by Netflix and all this stuff. You won't have to get in and do all the dirty work.
Yeah, but I think they tried that with Google TV and failed. I think we saw that. I mean, Eric Schmidt's, 2/3 of televisions will have Google TV integrated into it. Like, that didn't happen. Like, making those OEM deals and especially on the consumer electronics side is much harder. And you've got Samsung already entrenched with their smart TV function and the other TV manufacturers, Vizio's got an integration there. They've all struck deals with Netflix and with Amazon and their own kind of thing. It's a very murky road to go down, you know, like there's a lot of pre-existing agreements and partnerships in place. I don't know where it fits. I don't know, you know, like we talk a lot. Personally, I like the idea of a dumb monitor and then let me attach devices to it to make it smarter, because I feel as if you get a monitor with firmware or software built into the TV, you're stuck to that, whatever that is. And I'd rather have the power to change it, but I'm more of a power user than anybody else, so I could be different, you know.
But the flip side to that is, if it's running Android, then I can hack it a lot easier.
True.
You know,
yes,
you know what I mean? Yeah, so that's kind of I'm with you. I understand exactly what you're saying. Like let me just hook up whatever I want to do, right? But at the same time, if it's running Android, I can see some really cool applications, maybe some new games coming out that are more like Kinect style games or something like that. I mean, there are some possibilities there. And for me as a hacker, because Android is fairly hacker friendly, I kind of like having that on the TV as opposed to having, you know, Samsung or LG put their whatever their software is that they're not going to let me touch.
Yeah. But hacker friendly is not consumer friendly.
Yes, true. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, especially when it comes to all the rights nonsense that we get into with multimedia content. Yeah, it does seem like games is a big area where this kind of device could stand out. But it's interesting that all that sensor talk that was in that previous report wasn't in this, although I don't think it explicitly said that wouldn't be part of it.
It just wasn't part of it. Yeah. I mean, I think they're definitely going to go the games route. I think definitely, I mean, like, there's so much talk, especially with the Xbox One and the PS4 coming out, that this is the last generation of set-top box game, and it's all going to go, it's going to move to the cloud and be streaming and all that sort of stuff. You know, so I think especially with Google launching their game center and the Play stuff in the Play Store and really trying to push that and build up Android as a gaming platform, I think it's going to happen eventually. Whether or not the Chromecast has the power to support that, I don't think it does. So I don't know what to expect from the Nexus TV, but I can't wait to see it. And as Jason knows, we could do a whole show on this topic, and I just go on and on and on and on. But yeah,
that's why I put Ron Richards next to that story.
I like my TV, all right? I like it a lot. And that's the thing, like Chromecast. I mean, Chromecast is neat, but I feel like it's almost like makes the TV less than. It just makes it just stupid, the monitor. And I feel like there's more power you could do with a larger lean back couch experience, you know, than what the Chromecast is currently doing.
Yeah, and you know, that's potentially what this does. It kind of solves both issues, because I love the simplicity of Chromecast. I love just picking up my phone and going, you know what, send this video up there. Okay, great. Now I don't have to think about it. Instead of pulling out my remote, navigating the menu and doing it all, it's like, I already have it here. Just put it up there. All right, good.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm the same way. And then my wife's there, she can pick up her Android device, or you know, potentially someone's here with an iOS device. On the rare occasion we allow those into our home, then they could use that to control it. I kid, mainly. But I think you hit the nail on the head, Jason, that maybe it's offering something for people who have needs like us, who just want to use the device I have and send stuff there, and then people who are looking for a more immersive, I guess, sort of all-around entertainment experience.
Right, right.
Of course, and we're all speculating, maybe the thing's not even going to ever ship. Who knows? Yeah,
potentially not.
Could end up being the Apple TV set-top as well. I mean, that's been rumored for forever, too.
And right.
You know.
Well, I'll tell you what does exist. Three new things through the Play Store. Actually, two of them being Google Play Edition hardware. This kind of came out of nowhere. First, the LG G Pad 8.3 with stock 4.4 KitKat. The original version actually released a few weeks ago. This is $349 with a 16 gig storage inside. Snapdragon 600, 1920 by 1200 display, 2 gigs of RAM, 5 megapixel rear facing camera, and 1.2 megapixel front facing camera. That's a Google Play Edition LG G Pad 8.3. And then the second being the Sony Z Ultra with stock 4.4 KitKat. This is $649, which, I mean, we're so used to, like, at least in the recent history, the Nexus 5, you know, ridiculous price for unlocked device. $650 is kind of standard, $600, $650 for these devices. But this is a 6.4-inch 1920 by 1080 display, 2.2 gigahertz Snapdragon 800, processor, 2 gigs of RAM, 16 gig storage, micro SD, 3,000 milliamp hour. This one I thought is kind of interesting because I have heard quite a few people say, I want a Sony Nexus. I want the Sony, you know, something Sony to get anointed with this extra kind of Google touch. And here you go, a Sony Z Ultra Google Play Edition. What do you guys think?
Great. Mm-hmm. More Google. No, I mean, it's kind of a... Well, okay, great. Didn't see that coming. But I think the more Google Play Edition devices that are available for me personally, my taste, is the better, because I love having that pure Google experience as opposed to whatever the overlay is of the manufacturer. So
sure.
It's nice to finally add Sony to the pack.
Yeah, what's interesting to me about these specifically is that they seem more well, both of these devices seem more well suited to the Google Play Edition setup than the HTC One and the Galaxy S4. It was cool that they did that, but both of those with the Galaxy S4 and its the hardware button weird Samsung setup, and then the One with its capacitive setup, you know, these both use virtual buttons, so it's easy once you put stock Android on there. You've got really the setup the way it's designed to run with KitKat, with Google's navigation bar and everything. And so, yeah, they seem to lend themselves well to that. That said, I'll be interested to see how much of a success they are. I suspect it's going to be a pretty small niche item, especially when it comes to the phone with, I mean, the size of it, the price of it and everything. But it's great that they're offering them for sure.
That's a good question that I was going to wonder. I wonder what the sales numbers on these editions are like. You know, like I wonder if it is if it is worthwhile for everyone involved to be doing this.
You know? Yeah, they don't really market them either. I mean, they market Nexus stuff some, but the Play Store, I guess if you go to the Play Store or you click on the right thing, maybe you'll see a little box for it, but they don't really do much marketing at all.
I guess
it's just sort of the inside, like our crowd, the little, you know, the geek crowd who knows about it. Maybe that's enough to make it worthwhile.
Like, is it for developers and is it for people who are on the inside? Or like, I'm always curious from the business side of things, like what makes it a good ROI and whether it's worth everyone's time to do this, you know? Because I imagine Google's got to commit to a certain number of of devices, you know, like the, to make, you know, to actually do it and all the work involved to it. I wonder what that equation is of whether or not they say, okay, yeah, this is worth to continue doing. Let's add more devices and that sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, that is an important question because that tells you eventually that tells everyone whether they keep doing this, which I think it's a great thing too. The more devices that get this Play Edition kind of capability or, you know, alternative option, the better, because we're always asking for, you know, I love, you know, this device is great. The hardware is awesome, but man, I do not like the overlay. It's nice to have the option. I also wonder just how many people are snapping these up, but they came back for seconds, right? The first batch was the HTC One and the S4. They're back again, but maybe they just haven't learned that lesson yet, whether they continue to do it or not. And then finally, real quick here, Google released a white Nexus 7. You can get that now if you have to have it, 32 gigs only. Right now, maybe they'll have a 16 gig version of it, but white Nexus 7. Everybody's doing white and black on their devices these days, and there you go. The Nexus 7 is no different.
Well, speaking of white and black and running in the black, I'm trying.
Ooh, nice
here.
Transition.
I'm trying. I'm trying.
I'll give you that one.
The Moto G, there's an interesting article about the Moto G. Is it actually making any money for Google/Motorola? Or is it a loss leader, as they call it? The interesting article came out today, Slash Gear. They say that the actual, you know, Motorola sells this phone for $199, but if you do the teardown, there's actually only $123 in components in there. And then you add in the marketing costs and the engineering costs and all that stuff. And they estimate that this phone, unlike other phones, probably only nets about 5% back in profit. And other devices, like a lot of the Samsung devices, it's estimated that they make about 20% when they sell those phones. So it's quite a bit of difference. What do you guys think? I mean, this is a low-end phone, a very nice low-end phone. Actually, there was a really good write-up in it comparing it to other phones in Ars Technica this week. What do you guys think? Is Google throwing this out there as a loss leader, just trying to get more market share, or I say Google/Motorola, right? Because it could be from either side of the fence. Presumably, this is Motorola making the decisions at this point in terms of what hardware goes into their phones. But what do you guys think?
I think it was a statement. I mean, just by and large, this is a Motorola/Google statement that says, "Look, we want to make a statement about how people are buying phones or how people are acquiring their phones, whether they're getting it through subsidy or not. And they're willing to take, you know, little to nothing profit on it. I mean, it's Google. They can afford to do that. If this works into their long-term plan and, you know, maybe it plays into whatever they have coming down the line, be it Project Ara with Motorola or whatever things that we haven't even heard of yet. They can afford to do this right now. They've got them. They certainly have the overhead to pull it off and hopefully change the way the market does this. It benefits Android. It certainly benefits Android to have lower cost devices out there running Android on them.
Yeah, we mentioned last week that these the Moto X and the Moto G are just slightly skinned, right? Just a few extra features and applications.
Yeah.
But it really does have the Google or the Android look and feel to both of these phones. So. Maybe they're just trying to, you know, gain mind share, eyeballs, and convince people that this look and feel of theirs is the right way to go as opposed to other vendors. I don't know. But then again, you know, you don't want to cheese off, you know, LG or Samsung or the other vendors, too. Mm-hmm. They kind of run a tricky line here, I think. It must be kind of difficult for them to make decisions about, ooh, do we put this phone out? It's going to be really cheap. A lot of people might, you know, buy it. Is that going to upset our partners? You know, I can see those conversations happening, you know, behind the closed doors and things.
Yeah, hopefully that's where the firewall, as they say, between Google and Motorola comes in, where Motorola can say, look, we have carte blanche to just go with it, you know. But I have to imagine this is partially influenced by Google as well. But
yeah,
you know, the other manufacturer, I mean, this is a ridiculous price for great hardware. In fact, Ars Technica had a review of the Moto G, and they basically say it puts every single cheap Android phone to shame.
Yep.
Based on their experience with the device. Yet you don't have necessarily the other, you know, the other manufacturers in the field, you know, crying out in sheer terror and saying, hey, this is not fair. yet. I suppose if they keep doing it and it actually pulls market share away in a significant amount, then maybe that'll change the scenario.
Yeah. Or, I mean, it's a competitive marketplace. Yeah, they could choose to do their own low-end phone. Absolutely. I mean, you know, everything's fair game here. It's interesting, the Moto G, the only thing I would say about that comparison, and I know I said this last week too, but Christmas is coming. And I have a feeling those Nexus 4s, there's going to be a lot of them out on Craigslist and eBay and whatever place you shop online. And then, you know, and the nice thing about the Nexus 4 is it does have LTE. So, you know, it's kind of like, because I just bought a Nexus 4 actually for exactly for $180.
Oh, the Nexus 5 has LTE, right.
The Nexus 5 has LTE. Yeah. The Nexus 4 does have a faster, it might not be considered quote unquote LTE, but it is a faster transmission speed. Anyway, you can look all that stuff up. It's not LTE officially, but go look it up. Anyway, so you can get a slightly faster phone certainly in terms of CPU speed and everything else for about the same price. And I know I can because I just got one for exactly the same price. If you want to do used equipment that might be slightly faster, you can find it out there. But if you want a new phone, I think this is a great choice to go with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one thing to add to the Moto G discussion, you know, you always have to remember with Motorola in the equation, it's a little more involved. But I mean, Google traditionally doesn't make its money selling devices.
Right.
Of course, Motorola, I'm sure, would love to. But Google on the whole, its overarching goal is to get you to use more people to spend more time using Google services. You know, whether it's Gmail, Google Search, and, you know, ultimately from a business perspective, of course, they're getting to know your preferences, serving you better ads, and that's how they make, you know, the lion's share of their money. So perhaps with the Moto G, part of it too is just getting more people who might not spend the money we spend or sign up to your contract to get a, you know, high-end phone, to get them into that ecosystem, give them a good experience instead of the just god-awful one that low-end Android phones and low-end phones in general have been thus far. And even if they're making a small profit, maybe it's a broader Google sort of goal of expanding the market and getting people in that sort of low-end phone buying crowd to embrace it and spend more time online and get into it and all that. But it's tricky because that's the Google goal. Then you got to say, well, what about the Motorola goal? But Motorola is Google. So maybe that comes into play to some degree too.
Sure. Interesting stuff. All right, let's take another break and thank another one of our sponsors of today's episode and a returning sponsor, 99 Designs, connecting people looking for great graphic design with a community of more than 225,000 graphic designers from all over the world. 99 Designs has it. This is just a tremendous service and a kind of a boon for people who have a great idea or have a project in mind and just don't know how to create a design around it. This is how you do it. If you need a new logo, mobile app, business card, t-shirt, any kind of graphic design, you're going to find the right designer for your project at 99 Designs. You tell 99 Designs what you need. Dozens of designers from their community submit designs created just for you. You actually give those designers your feedback to help them refine their designs and then select and pay for your favorites. So you're going to get a ton of ideas from all these developers, and you pick and choose. What? That's awesome power that you have. They do all this work, and then you say, yes, these are the things that I like. You help them refine their designs, and then you pick and pay for your favorite, and, you know, it's yours. It's yours to use for your project. And, you know, this is especially true if you're developing an Android app. You can get anything from icons to buttons to your entire mobile app designed at 99 Designs. And I mean, there's just a ton of really cool examples that Brian's showing off on the screen here right now, but it's cool stuff, man. It's just, you know, super talented designers that'll help you do the things you might not have the capability of doing yourself and entirely with your communication and guidance. That's a great service. So here's what you can do. You can start your next graphic design project for as low as $199. Visit 99designs.com/AAA. You'll get a $99 power pack of services for free. And a power pack gives you more designer time and attention. 99 Designs will actually bold, highlight, and feature your design project in the 99 Designs marketplace, and you'll get nearly twice as many designs as a result. So if this all sounds great to you, just visit 99designs.com/AAA. See the power that is 99 Designs marketplace, and we thank 99 Designs for their continued support of All About Android. You guys are great. Thanks for coming back week after week. All right, let's get into apps.
Well, Chromecast certainly keeps scoring points with developers and end users. as they continue to roll out more apps, or as the owners of these apps continue to add Chromecast support, whichever way you want to look at it, they've added a bevy of new applications here to Chromecast support, including apps from Plex, Real Player Cloud, what? Vivo, Viki is another one I haven't heard of, but hey, there's a lot of new apps coming to Chromecast. So if you Real Player, does anybody use Real Player Cloud?
I was going to say, back up. I feel like we're burying the lead. What is Real Player? Wait a minute. Where? Like, what year is it?
Yeah, I know.
That was a story to me, too. Real Player is still a thing. People use that, have that. Who knew?
I've been trying to destroy RM and RA files off my machines for years.
Yeah, exactly.
But you don't enjoy their extremely crisp and pristine low bitrate compression? What?
Oh, my God. Do you remember how insidious that application was? Oh, man. It was awful.
Even back then, when I was using Real Media Files on my site to like deliver audio, I knew it was bad. But
there wasn't a lot of choices. I mean,
there weren't many choices. Yeah. Exactly.
So apparently, Smitty in the chat room says Real Player Cloud is a great service. It's like Dropbox for video.
That's pretty neat.
Huh.
Okay,
there you go. I like
that. Well, which sounds kind of perfect for Chromecast.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and I'm no business major, you know, but I would have called it something else.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, like, the brand is so malign, don't you think? I mean, like, yeah, even that logo, like, go away, just name it something else.
They should have dropped that brand a long time ago. I think the more interesting news here is Plex.
Yeah,
you know, people that use Plex. One. I mean, people love Plex as both the client and the backend server to do a media server for their homes. I mean, I think going into Plex and be able to hit that button that says, you know, send this to Chromecast and have it just come up on your TV. I mean, I think that's the biggest winner here for this list. You know, Vivo, I know there's some people that use Vivo. I think that's probably second in my mind as far as probably adoption. And then Real Player Cloud and Viki. Again, I don't know what Viki is. Sorry. I just don't.
Yeah, no, Plex is the big story here. Plex is the probably the best and most powerful application for video and all that sort of stuff, you know, being able to have a home server and be able to stream that content somewhere else. And just the whole Plex integration is so beautiful, and they've done such a great job with it. It's great to see it up on Chromecast now. So. Yeah,
there's also
I've been asking about Plex from the start. Oh, sorry. I was going to say, that's the thing I've heard the most when we talk about Chromecast from the day it launched. When will it support Plex? Can I get Plex? What do I do about local streaming? So yeah, I agree. That's the big one here. So it's awesome they finally got that in there.
Yeah, definitely. There's also an app called Avia, which is a media player for Android that added Chromecast support on Tuesday. Is that today? Today, Tuesday?
Yep.
Or last week? Wow, great. So if you're using
Avia's all right. I use that. They have a Google TV app, and I play with it. It's a nice approach.
It's okay. I use MX Player. I think you do too, Ron.
Yes, I do. Yep.
So if MX Player was able to add Chromecast support, that would be completely awesome. But you know, again, MX Player is really meant to optimize the experience on your tablet or phone with the way they do software and hardware decrypting and things. So they're focused a little bit differently, but still having that option in some other apps that people use a little bit more broadly, I think would be great.
Yeah. They've got to be. I would be very surprised if MX Player is not working on an integration with that. I mean, that just makes the most sense.
More and more. I mean, Beyond Pod is also on the list. Washington Post TV, Songza, Red Bull TV, okay, Revision 3, Vivo. Beyond Pod, so you have a podcast player that you can Chromecast. Pocket Cast.
I saw something on Google Plus earlier today from Shifty Jelly, I think is their company name. The guys who run that, great guys. And they were saying that they've had Chromecast support ready to go on their end for some time, and they're just waiting for Google to approve them. So I suspect that's probably the case with other apps too. So maybe it's kind of like they're testing the waters here, and maybe the floodgates will open next. Let's hope. Because, Pocket Cast would be great to see.
They're doing it in waves. More and more Chromecast support, though, is very good.
Yep. We'll talk about support and more support. Google Play Music users can celebrate a little because the latest update to the application, version 5.3, introduces the ability to store cached or pinned music to external storage, i.e. a micro SD card. So finally, you are free, and if you are able to, if you have a micro SD card in your phone or in your device, you can pin music and save it and save some space there, and it makes it much easier for local playing, and that's a very, very cool feature, even though I don't have a phone with a micro SD card, but still I'm jealous. It's nice to see it being powerful. So
this is totally, I mean, people have been dying for this feature. I know I have. Yep. In fact, even while I was in, I don't know if it was while I was traveling in Hawaii or wherever I was, traveling somewhere, And I wanted to listen to some music on the plane, so I pinned this music. And then, like, whenever I got – I was able to do it. And then when I got to my destination, all of a sudden, like, it said, oh, you might not be able to receive text messages because your phone is full. And I was like, what the heck? And then I remembered it just takes up so much space. And a lot of these
phones – You can listen to that Beatles album.
But I did. I could listen to the music. But, you know, a lot of these phones have limited storage. I really miss my 32 gigs of storage. I'm stuck with my 16 gigs on my S4 that I bought. And luckily I do have the internal SD card. So just being able to have that little checkbox, have all of that music go to the SD card is huge. There were ways to do it. In fact, I was just looking into ways to do this last week because I didn't want to run into this problem again. There were ways to make links to other file systems and so forth. And it's kind of, you got to get into the Linux part of Android and do some changes. But now, luckily, there's just a button. You hit it, it goes there, done. Beautiful. Love it.
Cool. So, Ron, this ever-evolving journey into SMS for you, if that's one way to put it, where are you at right now? We asked because a lot of people are very curious. There's been a lot of questions about this.
Yeah, so folks who missed last week's episode, I declared my hatred for Google Hangouts, and I wanted to separate my chatting and that sort of thing from my SMS messaging. So many of you out there responded to the Google Plus post, and a lot of folks on Twitter and things like that. So I wanted to give a quick brief check-in, and then we'll go into more detail next time I'm in studio or when we have more time. But real quickly, and I forget who posted it on Twitter, but someone over the weekend suggested an app called Emu. EMU and told me to check it out. And this one was really cool. And I used it for a whole night. And I'll tell you why I stopped using it. But it's a stylish, good looking application. And it really integrates a lot of data like very smartly. So if someone asks you, where are you? It will give you the Google Maps coordinates of where you are and be like, send this to them. And it's a real great intersection of SMS messaging and data that's available to you on the phone. Was really cool. Enjoyed using it, except that for some reason I couldn't make it my default SMS app. Whenever I went to the settings and say default SMS app, it wasn't available. So I think that the developers of Emu need to update their app to plug into the Google to the Android services to make it a default app possibility. So I stopped using Emu. And now I'm actually using Textra SMS, which was suggested to me a couple of days ago as well. It's by the folks who made Chomp SMS, which is an app I previously used. This is the one I'm currently using. It seems to be pretty good. I'm enjoying it. Pretty straightforward. Nice, good design. Good integration. So far, so good. So that's where we're at.
Now, is there no way with the Hangouts app to not sync your actual chats and to only use it for SMS? Right? Because wouldn't that solve the problem for you, Ron? No.
It would.
You can do the opposite of that. You cannot use it for SMS, but you can't only use it for SMS.
But it's replacing – that's where it gets really tricky, right? Like it's replacing the messages app in Android. So it is your SMS. So if you only want to use it for SMS and you do not ever want to use Hangouts, like –
I think there'd be a roundabout way to do it. Correct me if I'm wrong, but what if you signed in, because you can have multiple, if you have multiple Google accounts connected to your device, you can sign in or out of any account within Hangout. So, and again, not an easy way to do this, but let's say you add on a second Google account, not the one you use for, you know, chatting within Hangouts on your computer or whatever.
Right.
You go into Hangouts, you set that one to be the one that SMS messages show up in, which you can do, and then sign out of Hangouts from your primary Google account. I think that would do the trick.
Too
not
much
user friendly, not an easy
too
way
much
to do
work.
It.
But,
yeah.
Way too much work.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and a couple of other people tweeted at me with suggestions as to how to do similar things like that. But then what I'm looking for is my approach is to take it as like the, you know, if it was my mom using a phone, just the regular normal end user, and that approach just becomes too kind of hacky. I will give a shout out to Corey Weston on Twitter who suggested Emu. Which is a really, really nice looking app. They just need to make it play better with KitKat. So.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people in the chat room are saying just sign out of Hangouts. I don't know if that
does that work or does that turn Hangouts off?
No. You can sign out from one account and then sign in from another or not. I did that for a while when I didn't want to get messages on a phone. I was testing, you know, for my main Google account. And
so
then
if you sign out,
you can sign into an.
If you sign out of all of your accounts and then you receive an SMS, is it going to channel through Hangouts?
That's a good question. I guess
because the phone number is tied to your Google account, right? And that's why it's routing through. That's where I get confused. Like if you go into Hangout settings and you say, this is my email address, these phone numbers are associated with it. So if I sign out, those phone numbers are no longer associated with it.
So you need, I just signed out of all of my Google accounts. And you need to be at least logged into one.
That's the issue.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
So I just tried it. I signed out of my primary personal one. That left my work one, which is not good. I don't want anyone to find me there. and when I signed out of there, it's like, okay, you're out of Hangouts. And it just didn't spit me out. So
actually, I'm still in. Mine shows SMS only.
You're right.
Yeah. I don't know. I signed out of both of them. I have two accounts on this phone. I signed out of both of them, and when I go into settings, it has SMS, and it was still active, and about Google Plus Hangouts.
Okay, so I just went to sign out of the second account, and it says, signing out of this account will close Hangouts, so you can't see it, it's all white, but it'll say, will close Hangouts, so I say that, and then when I launch Hangouts, it signs me back in.
I did not get that message.
Interesting. Maybe it's because I'm on a Nexus 5?
I was going to say, because your phone, the Nexus 5, was built only with Hangouts as the primary messaging, whereas older phones have alternate methods still intact. I wonder if that's related.
I still have the the messaging app, the old messaging app, because this phone is a ROM that I'm running.
Right.
With the Hangouts app installed on top of what the base. So, I think that's exactly it. If you have the Messenger app already, then probably you could do what we were just saying. But if you don't, on Nexus 5, then you're screwed.
I can't find the chat rooms asking me what version of Hangouts I'm on, about a Google Hangouts. I am on version 2.0.216 of Hangouts.
Which is what Scudrex said you need. So, okay, so this is an evolving, continuing story. I'm sure we'll get more emails about this.
I look forward to when I get a bumper. So.
I'm on 2.0.128.
You need to update, apparently.
So you're further than me.
No, behind.
I'm behind. Yeah. Wait, what am I on?
All right, you guys figure that out. I'm gonna check this ad out here. We have to one final sponsor that we need to thank today. So that would be Hulu, Hulu.com. Actually, Hulu Plus. And you've probably tried Hulu.com. And Hulu Plus is actually so much more than that. With Hulu Plus, you can watch your favorite shows anytime, anywhere. They let you watch thousands of hit TV shows and movies in the living room or on the go. With your smartphone or your tablet. Hulu Plus, you can watch your favorite TV shows. If you like Jimmy Kimmel Live, Shark Tank, Family Guy, SNL, they're all in here. I'm going to TV here so you can kind of see some of these. You've got Family Guy's in here, American Dad. There's just South Park. They make it really easy for you to find these shows and just launch right into it. Maybe I should launch into South Park. I'll try a different show. You can also check out exclusive content, including Hulu Originals. They have The Wrong Man's, Behind the Mask, which is actually Hulu's new docuseries. And that actually takes you inside the world of sports mascots. Kind of crazy. They also have things like trailers and, what's trending now. Clips as well from your favorite shows. Just a bunch of stuff in here. Lost, Doctor Who, Community. You watch every episode of those shows, Star Trek even, just a lot of stuff to send you down the wormhole when you have some time to kill. You'll get access to a collection of ad-free movies, kids' content. This is all for $7.99 a month. Catch up on current shows, binge on old favorites, and catch a great movie while you're at it. Stream as many TV shows and movies as you want, wherever you want. Right now, you can try Hulu Plus free for 2 days when you go to huluplus.com/allaboutandroid. That's a special offer for our listeners. If you go without that, you get one free week. In this case, with huluplus.com/allaboutandroid, you get two to try it out. Make sure you use that URL so you get that extended free trial. And they know we sent you, because that's important as well, right? We thank Hulu Plus for their continued support of TWiT and All About Android. We hope you enjoy watching instantly with Hulu Plus. Thank you. All right. It's that time for the arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
The Arena.
Arena. Touchdown. All right, who wins in the end zone this week? Episode 138. We had a few apps last week, four of them to be specific.
Got my fingers crossed.
Yeah, I think you'll be pretty happy with what you see. Insta Font Maker wins 36% of the vote. Unified Remote, second at 28%. FIFA, third at 24%. And VSCO Cam, fourth at 13%. Interesting. VSCO Cam.
That is fascinating for two reasons. One, because it's really spread out, I think, more than usual.
Yeah.
And two, I thought VSCO Cam was going to run away with it.
Well, you know, it had a lot of buzz last week. I don't know. Either I did a bad job showing it off or people are like, yeah, I've heard about it, whatever. You know, and sometimes I think there's a little backlash from apps that start on iOS and end up on Android.
Yeah.
Not all the time, but sometimes.
I thought Unified Remote was going to take it just because it seemed like such a cool app. I mean, I went out and checked it out right after that. I was like, ooh, maybe I'll download this.
Yep.
But yay, I win.
You win. You win notoriety in the arena.
Yeah, what do I win?
You win.
Where's my prize? Hey, not too close. I've got a cold.
I know. I take that back. Okay, so I lose, so I go first. This is called Call Pop Out. So what is it? Essentially, here's the problem. When you are doing whatever you're doing with your Android device and suddenly a call comes in, it overtakes your entire screen. Oops, sorry. It overtakes your entire screen and hits your microphone and everything like goes away. And all you see is that, you know, full screen picture of the person that's calling, action item. You know, do you take this or do you decline the call, whatever. Call pop out is a way to kind of allow you to continue doing what you want with your device. And when something, you know, when a call comes through, it's just kind of a nice little overlay down at the bottom, the person's picture, the name. And then when you hold down on the picture, you actually get some action items. So I can show you a preview here. So essentially, this would be the contact, right? If I hold down on it, I get all the action items. And the thought being, if you're watching a movie on YouTube, essentially, I mean, really, if you look up here, you can select, you know, from your app list and assign certain apps that if you're running that app, like YouTube, watching a movie, you don't want that experience to go away entirely when a phone call comes through. You still want to keep watching and, you know, decide at the moment with the overlay so it, you know, it doesn't go away. It keeps it on the screen for you. We see a lot of these kind of overlay apps lately, and this is kind of another one, kind of a cool way to change how your phone calls are displayed for you. You can do a lot of kind of customization as far as where they are. I'm not on premium version right now, and my display seems to be ramping down there. But if you're on the other version, if you're on the premium version, you can do a lot of things like positioning that call notification at different places on the screen. You can make the icon of the head size that appears there much larger. You can customize it down to the color. And I don't know, it's just kind of a cool way to change the activity on your phone when a phone call comes through. So if you want to continue watching that video or continue, you know, looking at your webs, whatever web page you happen to be on when a phone call comes through, Call Pop Out might be for you. It's free through the store, through the Play Store, and go check it out. It's called Call Pop Out. Hope you like it. Looks all right. Cool. There we go. So let's see here. So what does that mean? That means, Ron, that means you are next. And I'll show yours off as well. I have that here.
All right, cool. Well, if there's anything that sums up the theme of apps that I've been into this year, well, last year I was into the crazy weird apps. This year I think I've been more into beautifully designed applications. Every time I find one in the arena, I'm looking for one that's really embracing Holo and really embracing the future of Android. And the folks at AnyDo or Any.do, who brought us AnyDo Tasks or AnyDo To-Do List, bring us Cal, which is a new calendar application, which you cannot deny how pretty this app is. Not only is it a beautifully designed calendar application that looks great on tablets and on phones, but it's really taking the whole calendar aspect and really embracing all the data that is available to you on your devices and integrating them in an interesting way. So Jason's got it there. It looks great on a phone or on a tablet, either way. It connects with all of your various calendar services. So if you've got Google Calendar or Exchange or Outlook or whatever, it will connect with it. It will work. It will connect with Facebook and automatically seamlessly integrate all those birthday notifications, which honestly, 60% of the time, I'm only on Facebook to find out whose birthday it is. So this is a nice way to do that. And it really pulls in the photos in a beautiful way.
Yeah, it does a good job.
Yeah, it also, if you use any to-do list, it really is a seamless integration, of course, within their own suite of apps to tie in your to-do list and your task list into the calendar. And they just really, you know, they give you a nice interview. You see right here, we've got a scheduled appointment for the show itself. And you see that it ties into Google Maps really nicely as to where it is. They've integrated with Uber, so you can call an Uber direct from the calendar if you're using it. It ties in with your contacts really nicely. It utilizes the photos. It utilizes that nice kind of card-based display. And it really works. Now, Jason, can you turn it to landscape view?
I can.
So when you do that, it gives you a bit more of expanded full screen kind of view where you get both the calendar, but then it utilizes kind of a tablet-esque kind of approach even on the phone in landscape view. So it's pretty good. I mean, it's basically a really kind of next generation calendar. If you're really tied into your calendar, if you have a lot of meetings, if you're doing a lot of stuff, if you're on the go, the UI is really kind of very simple to use. It's very, you get adapted to it very quickly. The widgets on there are really nice in terms of presenting the data. And it's a powerful calendar, so it's really good. Totally free in the Google Play Store. And if you're looking for a calendar that kind of blows away all the other calendars that are out there, I think Cal is the one. So,
cool.
Awesome. There you go. That's very well designed.
Did you mention, does it have a lock screen widget and a widget you can put on a home screen?
It's got a widget. Yeah, it's got a really nice widget. I don't know if it has a lock screen widget. I didn't actually look to see if it's a
I can show the widget that I have right now.
Yeah. The widget is really, really nice. The widget gives a nice little kind of little view of your day. And then there are other kind of you can peek at any it allows you to peek into whatever you're doing, whatever the event is. Yeah, there it is, and gives you all the information very easily. So
I will have you know that on Friday I'm getting fillings at the dentist. Not looking forward to that. Thanks so much, Cal, for reminding me of that. great app. I almost picked it, and you had already grabbed it in the dock.
Yeah, I stole
Jerk. There you go. It's Cal, and it's very well designed, very, very pretty app. They did a lot good with it, so check it out. And let's see here, JR. I have your app installed on my trusty Zoom here.
Ooh, the best device to demo any application today.
Bigger screen, but I'm going to show it off, so go ahead and talk about it. I'll show it off.
Yeah, cool. So I thought I would give a nod, a shout out to Action Launcher. There are a lot of launchers out there, a lot of really good ones. Many of them are kind of the stock plus setup where you've got a, you know, pretty stock-like kind of configuration. You can add more into it. Action Launcher is not that. Action Launcher is a very unique thing, pretty innovative. So what you're seeing there, what Jason's doing, instead of a typical app drawer, all of your applications and widgets come in from a menu where you slide your finger from the left side of the screen. You can do it anywhere in the system and get to them. You can jump to a letter to get to something easily. And then if you slide from the right, and this is actually something new, the reason specifically I thought this was good to talk about now, a new version 2.0 major release just came out a few days ago. And this is something new. When you slide in from the right, you can put – it's basically a home screen that you can then access anywhere from the system. I mean, you're in Chrome. You can pull it up by swiping in. So by default, it's got the little search widget. It's got what amounts to like a recent apps widget. Those auto-populate with whatever you've had open recently. But you can customize it. You could drop in a Gmail widget. You could drop in shortcuts you go to frequently. It's just kind of like a quick access panel that then you can get to anywhere in the system. And what's cool, too, is that even if you don't want to use Action Launcher as your main launcher, you can actually use that in conjunction with another launcher. Let's say you like Nova or Apex or even your phone's stock launcher. If you install Action Launcher, you can get to that quick slide-in drawer on the left and the quick little panel on the right. So it can be a launcher or it can just be kind of an element to your system. So some other things about Action Launcher that make it a little different. You've got that top of screen action bar. You see the search button brings up a universal search. You start typing in. You can search across the web, your device, contacts, music apps, all that simultaneously. And you can disable that, too. If you don't want it, you can hide that whole top bar and get a more kind of standard look. Another cool function, one that I really like, is a swipe-up widget option. So if you go to an app that has a built-in widget, it'll prompt you this the first time with any launcher. But if you go ahead and tap create, You can just have a regular app shortcut on your home screen, and you swipe up on it, and the widget is right there. And the widget doesn't have to take up space until if and when you need it. It's kind of cool. Like, you know, if you have it with Gmail, for instance, you can swipe up and get a quick look at your inbox, but you don't have to keep that giant chunk on your home screen all the time. And you can do a similar thing with folders. You could swipe up on the phone icon, for instance, to get it to show you a list of direct dial shortcuts. So the 2.0 release that came out recently also adds in all the KitKat-like home screen visuals, including the transparent status bar and nav bar if your device supports it. And along with the 2.0 release, the developer, Chris Lacey, put out a new free version of the app so you can try it without having to buy it. More limited in functionality, as you'd expect in the paid pro version. And then one last thing to note on it, if you do decide you want it, I believe it's still going on. He's running a sale where the pro version is half off. I think it's like $2. So it's cool. It's, you know, there are a lot of launchers that are pretty similar. This one is really different, and it has a lot of features that are nice that when you get used to having them there and then you go to a different launcher, you do miss them. So yeah, cool launcher to check out and see if it works for you.
Awesome. I love it. It's cool kind of layout, and it's well designed and everything.
I know we're showing this on a template, I know we're showing this on a tablet. I can get it out. But does this also work equally well on a phone?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think it maybe is more designed primarily for phones. When we were talking before the show, I was asking Jason how it looked on a tablet because I never tried it. But here I've got it. Listen, I don't know how well this will show up, but we'll try. Here it is running on a Moto X. And yeah, I mean, it actually looks really nice on there. You get the little slide and deal from that side.
Yeah.
The app drawer from there. So it works on a tablet. I think it's actually even more designed for the phone setup, though.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
But either way, evidently looks pretty good.
It looks a little bit like last week we talked about Sailfish OS. It seems to add a little bit of that overlay swipe from the left or right kind of thing. I mean, it's a different animal, but similar dynamic, similar action that you would use to get to your apps and things as what Sailfish OS is trying to do. So very interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. To me, the little swipe up widget thing is the coolest. Like, here I've got it. Let's see. Try to navigate myself. I tapped something. This is hard to do without looking at it. Yeah, you swipe up and you can get, like, you're on Google Plus.
Right.
You can see some latest posts. Like, yeah, whenever I don't use Action Launcher, I do miss that. So yeah, it's got some cool little touches.
Cool. So that is Action Launcher. It is free in the Play Store as well. And then, Aaron, you are rounding out the bases.
I'm rounding it out, coming into home. This is the home stretch, folks. If you're waiting to get done with these apps, we're almost done. So my app this week is called Pixel Dungeon. It's a really cool app. If you're looking for a game to play, especially it works really well on your phone. If you're looking for a game, new game to play, and you're a fan of the old, Final Fantasy III era type games where you're traveling around, this might be the app for you. It's actually really cool. One thing I got to say before we get done, I do have the audio up. Let me turn that up a little bit. Maybe Brian can bring that up. I don't know. There we go. So it's got really cool audio, really cool graphics. But before we even get into that, you'll notice when you install it on your phone, it doesn't ask you to install. You don't need any special permissions, which I thought was amazing. I've never seen an app that doesn't at least, you know, ask for some sort of permissions when you install the app. This asks for no special permissions to run on your phone. So number one, I mean, they get my vote right there just for that alone. So here it is, Pixel Dungeon, really simple mechanics. It makes really good use of touch, you know, on your phone. And you can choose to be three different things, a warrior, a mage, or a rogue. And you can be a huntress, but you have to unlock that. So we'll go ahead and do a warrior so you can see what this looks like. Descending into the dungeon. And it gives you a little, some information there. But all you do is you tap on the screen to tell it where to go. So if I tap over here, it opens up that room and there's a key. So I'm going to go grab the key. And then I can go back down here. I don't know if you can see, but I can actually see this. You probably can't. I can actually see what this is. So the places you've been are grayed out, but you can still see them. And the one thing I like about this is if I touch all the way down here on this other door, my little dude will run all the way down and try to unlock that door for me.
That's cool. It's really cool. An old game called Gateway to Apshai. You remember that?
I don't remember that one.
Old school.
So you go around collecting items. There's potions. There's seeds, which grow trees. You go down in the dungeon. Eventually, you can buy things. You collect gold. There's things you can fight. It's really, really cool. I was playing this, like, I showed up a little early today to the studio, and I was playing this basically the whole time. The other thing that's really nice, since it's on a phone, you can just zoom in and out. So if you've already, you know, done some progress and you've tracked around, you see lots of rooms and stuff, you can actually zoom out to get from place to place really easily, and your little dude just runs there and stuff. So really great audio, really good 8-bit audio, 8-bit graphics. I can make my guy fall in the pit. So I fell in the pit, which is really dangerous because these little dudes are squirrels or something. They really, here's the fighting action.
Yeah, get him, get him.
Ooh, I unlocked a badge.
Awesome. I love
so they have
this.
They have a badge system. So it's just really, really cool. I can't say enough about it. I mean, the fact that it doesn't require, first of all, it's free, number one. Number two, it doesn't require any special permissions on your phone, which is, I don't think I've ever installed any app that doesn't require permissions, except for maybe a calculator or something. And it keeps you coming back, because once you die, you can't just pick up where you left off. You actually have to go in and do start a new game. So it's like, oh, I've got to start over. You might think that's a pain, but it actually keeps bringing you back to the game. You're like, oh, okay, I'm going to see how low I can go this time. What level can I reach? Can I actually sell anything? What kind of spells can I find? It really keeps you coming back for more again and again and again. So I would highly recommend this app if you're looking for just a fun time, waste some time, you know, while you're at work. Never while you're at work.
Oh, yeah, don't say that on there.
While you're on the bus or whatever, you know, you're just looking for a fun game to play, I highly recommend Pixel Dungeon. They did a fantastic job with it. They're developing it. I've gotten like a couple of updates since I installed it. So definitely go out and check it out and vote for me on the poll so I can continue my winning streak.
Awesome. I love it. It so reminds me of Gateway to Apshai, and I was a huge fan of that game. So I'm gonna have to download this and install it.
I like the cockiness Aaron is showing. He's like, continue my streak. I like it. So
I'm filling in for Gina, and I want to win every poll. But you know, between now and then, so all right, I got to come up with something really good for next time, right?
All right. Interesting.
Pressure's
on. We'll see if you can pull that off.
Yep.
You decide whether Aaron can pull that off by going to our poll and voting for your favorite app of the week. AAApoll.com/139. Is it called Popout, Cal, Action Launcher, or Pixel Dungeon? AAApoll.com/139. And we'll just see Action Launcher and Cal.
It's early.
You never know. you just never know.
You can never. You can never go by the early returns. You can never can. So
that's right.
Voting's ended. Voting has just closed.
Dang, that was quick. And Action Launcher, wow. I guess, wins.
Rapid fire.
Awesome. So let's see here. So next week, Gina is still out next week. Daniel Bader of Mobile Syrup returns, does another visit to the show. We're super excited to have him back. But as for this week, that is it. And J.R. Raphael, really, just it's always awesome having you on the show. We hope you'll come back again.
Hey, thanks, man. Anytime. It's always fun being here.
Right on. Got anything cool that you're working on that you want to plug? Or really, where can people find your work?
Yeah, well, I'll have a couple new devices. I'll be doing some hands-on stuff. Maybe you can guess which ones. Google Play Edition, perhaps. Uh-huh. Yes, I think so. So, yeah, should be getting those very soon, and I'll be doing some hands-on stuff as the week goes on with both the tablet and the phone that are coming out. So, yeah, just the easiest thing, follow me on social network of your choice. Google Plus is where I spend most of my time and kind of the most active Android community going there. Awesome. I'm also on Twitter, Facebook. If you don't want to try to spell my last name, you can go to my website there at the bottom of the screen, jrstart.com, and find links to all my various things there.
Right on. Keep on kicking butt. Your articles are always great, and really appreciate you joining us on the show.
Hey, thanks, man. Absolutely. Nice to say.
Aaron.
Yes.
Always just awesome having you on the show.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me.
Especially because, like, you're not feeling well. You didn't have to do this.
I apologize for my voice. I'm not really.
No, you don't need to apologize.
But
I thank you for doing it anyways, though. Yeah.
Well, I love talking about Android that much, and I love these guys. I love hanging out with them that much. It doesn't matter how I feel. And plus, I can do neat didgeridoo sounds with my voice solo.
I could tell you couldn't do that before.
There's plus sides to being sick.
Where can people find your work?
You can find me on Google Plus as well. That's where I hang out. But if you're a Facebook fan or a Twitter fan, that's where you like to be. You can also follow. I repost to those networks as well as LinkedIn. You know, if you're on LinkedIn and you want to just browse around and see what I'm up to, you can do that. But if you want to have a conversation with me, follow me on Google Plus. I'm Aaron Newcomb there. Talk about all sorts of things. I do co-host a number of other shows on the Twit Network as well, Floss Weekly. Occasionally I'm on This Week in Google. And so you'll see me talking about open hardware, open source, hacking, board games, all kinds of different stuff. So if you're into those kinds of things, follow me on Google Plus. and tune into Floss Weekly tomorrow, quick plug for that show, where they're going to be talking about Free PBX, which is an open source alternative telephone system, business telephone system. So if you need to run a business telephone system for a small business or something, might be a good option for you. So tune in tomorrow, 8:30 Pacific time, where they'll be talking about that. So
cool. Excellent. Yeah. Thank you again, sir. Ron, how about you? What you up to?
Yes. So you can find me at about.me/RonXO. That's got all the links to my social networks, including Google Plus and Twitter and Facebook and all the fun stuff. Love talking to everybody. All the chat talking about SMS apps and things like that has been really awesome. And so keep it coming. And you can see my wacky journaling of my life as I listen to Christmas music nonstop. But in the meantime, during the day, I work at Image Comics and imagecomics.com. You can download DRM free comic books that you can read on your tablets. Or as we announced last week, they're available in the Google Play Store in the book section. So go check it out. Check out The Walking Dead and Saga and East of West and all the other great comic books that we're putting out every day. So awesome. There you go. Yes, right, there's Image.
Yay. Brian, our fantastic technical director, where can people find you on Twitter so that they can give you suggestions for what phone you should get?
You can find me on Twitter at @cranky_hippo, but I mostly post on Google Plus and stuff. And actually, Jason, I have to give a shout out. Actually, I have to look up his name real quick. Cosmic Arbiter from the chat room gave me a Moto X code.
No so, way!
Oh, nice.
I guess he's not going to use it, so he gave me that and a couple of other tips, another promo code for getting 30% off some
Holy
other
cow.
Stuff. Yeah. So. Wow. Thank you, Cosmic Arbiter, for that. And looks like I might have a Moto X sooner or later.
That is awesome. Well, awesome. I hope to hear the good news soon. But you know what? Get the phone you want you that speaks to you. It sounds like maybe the Moto X would be a good choice for
I
you.
I think my fiance is tired of me borrowing her Moto X, so I really like it, though.
It is a great device. And you can find me at about.me/JasonHowell. You can find my music that I produce at yellowgoldmusic.com. I've had such great positive response from everybody.
Good stuff,
you guys
stuff.
Have been really awesome at letting me know that you're listening to it and that you actually like it. So thank you for listening. Really happy that it's found your ears and that you're enjoying it. That is it for this week on All About Android. Thank you, chat room, as always, for joining us and giving us insight into the things that we miss. It's awesome having you guys along. Send us a voicemail at 347-SHOW-AAA. You can also send us an email or a video mail at AAA@twit.tv. We are on Twitter at Android Show. We're also on Google Plus, of course. We have a fantastic community there. So just do a search for All About Android and you will find us as well as the community there. We have a Reddit. It's twitaaa.reddit.com. The Reddit is somewhat active, building up a little bit of momentum there, but helps us fill out the show. Show notes and past episodes can always be found at twit.tv/AAA, as well as episodes on YouTube and iTunes. Finally, you can catch us live every Tuesday, starting at 5 p.m. Pacific, live.twit.tv. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android.